He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Goodbye, those roads. May you ever grow in our hearts. You are the greatest place to sense where lives were torn apart. You called out to our country, and you whispered to those in pain. Now you belong to heaven, and the stars spell out your name. And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never fading with the sunset when the rain set in. And your footsteps will always fall here along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before your legend ever will.
Elton John singing at the funeral of Princess Diana, who would have been 54 years old today. I remember sailing Voyager, my old sailboat, into the British port of Menorca as part of my around-the-world sail in 1998 in the Mediterranean. And we went into that British port, and we saw all the sailors lined up on the British naval vessels along the rail, and the British naval ensign was flying at half-staff, and I thought that Queen Elizabeth had passed. And then we had not been in radio communication with the outside world when I heard it was Princess Diana, this young, vivacious personality. People forget, you know, it was 17 years ago. What a gigantic public personality. She was larger than life. She was a princess wronged by her husband, Prince Charles. But she was everyone's princess. I remember the work she did removing landmines in places like Afghanistan, risking everything, and then dying in that car crash in Paris that I went on to cover. But Princess Diana would have been 54 years old today. You know, there's wars raging all over the place right now. And I want to talk about war this morning. I'm not talking specifically about the conflict with ISIS, which is going badly. I mean, there was another major terrorist attack on an Egyptian army outpost in Sinai yesterday, about 50 Egyptian soldiers dead. And this coming the day after ISIS killed Egypt's top prosecutor, blew him up in Cairo. So what a mess that is. I still think, and this is my firmest belief, and I wouldn't say this without being absolutely convinced of it, because I hate when old men send young men into battle. Nevertheless, the Obama administration, ladies and gentlemen, its response to ISIS is tepid at best. Given the enormity of this threat, mark my words, this threat posed not just to the Middle East and Israel and Europe, which is nearby, but also to the U.S. homeland. It requires a major military escalation to crush these terrorists before they spread their anarchist mayhem to Madison Square Garden, Penn Station. Anyway, the war on ISIS is not my lead story. Neither is the fire that destroyed that black church in South Carolina yesterday. This fire coming 20 years after the Ku Klux Klan burned down the same church. This time they're saying it may have been a lightning strike, Noam. Is that right?
Yeah, one federal source is ruling out arson, but now I see that everybody's involved, FBI, ATF, investigating this Mount Zion fire, so maybe they don't believe that initial source.
Dip into that. Pastor, do you have the press conference? Let me hear it.
Elder Parrott. We just ask that the state, the community, and the nation continue to pray for us. Continue to give us your well wishes, and we'll all make it through this together. At this time, I would like to introduce.
All right, this is the seventh black church to burn
the honorable
by natural or malicious causes, just since the Charleston, South Carolina church massacre 2 weeks ago. Seven black churches, 2 weeks. Maybe one, two, I don't know, maybe three accident. What about the other four? What's going on here? This demands a massive federal investigation. Is there a racist war against black churches? We're going to talk more about that at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. Again, keeping this war theme, my top story is not the New York civil war that's raging between our governor and our mayor. I mean, you check out both the New York Post and the New York Daily News. They've got gigantic spreads aside from big front page stories. Battleground New York, says the Daily News. Vendetta, mayor unleashes rapid fire tirade against ex-pal Andy. Bill de Blasio says gov bent on revenge. And somebody skipped town. I'm not sure who the news is referring to. Raging Bill, says the New York Post. Shocking attack by Mayor de Blasio at Vendetta Gov. All right, that's not my lead either, the governor and the mayor. We'll get to that at the bottom of this hour. So 10:30, we'll get to de Blasio Cuomo. Now, continuing with this war theme, I want to begin this morning with my war on, or with, rather, my war with Donald Trump and Ann Coulter over immigration. Now, these are both two dear friends with whom I am locked in rhetorical combat right now. By now, everybody knows about how the Donald incurred the wrath of most of the American Latino population with his wild generalizations about Mexican immigrants being drug dealers and rapists. When I criticized my former Celebrity Apprentice boss on Megyn Kelly's terrific Fox News show Monday night, and I see you're calling, I appreciate that. We'll get to your calls. And keep those ideas, whatever you have to say to me, percolating. I'm going to get to you. But anyway, I think that Donald was flat wrong. And I said that on Megyn Kelly's show Monday night. He's flat wrong. Immigrants commit, for example, proportionately less crime than the native born. Anyway, Ann Coulter responded to my appearance. She was egged on, invited to do so by Megyn, the best host in TV news probably right now, hot as a pistol. Anyway, so Ann essentially asked Megyn for equal time to defend Trump and also to push Ann's latest book, which is an anti-Hispanic immigrant diatribe called Adios America. So Megyn had Ann and me on a show last night. I'm curious to what you think about that debate. You can let me know at 866-HERALDO, 866-437-2536. I'm going to play you a clip of that debate last night. Ann was up first. Here's Ann.
I think the first most important point is these are not people who have a right to be here. So I don't care if there are two rapists. I don't care if there are two people coming in who are collecting welfare. Immigration is a government policy like any other, and it ought to be used to benefit the people already living here. That includes recent immigrants. There should not be any criminals coming in. It's bad enough having people come in who are accepting government, who need government assistance, to be bringing in people who are felons. Can't we cross that off the list? Secondly, just look at the Los Angeles County's most wanted list, whether it's the top 10 or the top 100. The idea that immigrants are committing crime at a lower rate than the native population is preposterous. My complaint was that the government won't simply count and tell us. Whatever facts there are, it's always people looking at ancillary facts, things like
a
most wanted list. Why doesn't the government just count?
Go ahead, Geraldo.
Well, I think, first of all, her basic premise, the title of her book, Adios America, is an insulting insinuation that Latinos are somehow going to pervert and drag down and degrade the America we all know and love. This is an insult. It is an insult that is, I won't use terms like racism because I don't believe that Anne is a racist. What she is a polemicist. She's written a screed, a diatribe here. She had a point she wanted to make, and she, in her very sharp and witty writing, has made it. Now, when I say that immigrants commit less crime than native-born, it's from surveys that I've done. For two books I've written on it, The Great Progression and His Panic. His Panic is appropriate especially for Anne, how Hispanics will lead America to a new era of prosperity. Oh, that's Great Progression. This one, Why Americans Fear Hispanics in the U.S. Great. That's Anne. She fears Hispanics in the U.S. Crime is at record lows in Los Angeles and in New York, the cities that you would assume would be the most impacted by the huge Latino influx.
I do want to say I don't think you're a racist either, Geraldo, though I think you're going kind of close to the edge by insisting that Hispanics piggyback onto the black experience in America. The reason Americans are so concerned with racism and should be concerned with racism, the reason we have civil rights laws, racial set-asides, affirmative action, is to make up for the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow by Democrats, I might add. It is not for people who just set foot in this country yesterday to piggyback on that very unique history in America and start claiming affirmative action.
Where does this piggyback business
come from? That happens. And as I said, here it is. I mean, this is not exactly a rigorous study saying there are lots of immigrants in L.A. and New York and the crime rate went down. Well, yeah, that's because Giuliani, the prison building boom. It's a fact that only about a third of California prisoners are white. So are you saying two-thirds of them are black?
Okay, go ahead. Let him
California
respond.
Has
ahead,
one of
Rollo.
The smallest black populations
according
in the country, only like 6%.
According to the Congressional Budget Office, these immigrants, the undocumented immigrants, contribute more in revenue to the United States pot than they take out in benefits. That's according to the Congressional Budget Office. According to the Social Security Administration, there is $100 billion paid by undocumented immigrants into Social Security with fake numbers for benefits they will never retrieve. That is their gift. That is their gift to us. They have remade entire neighborhoods, Passaic, Patterson. Go to Washington Heights. Unlike Anne, who researched the book from her computer, I've been to all these neighborhoods. I've been to the border. I've seen the immigrant vitality. We're all immigrants here. Anne's family, we're all immigrants, each of us. Language that this American hellhole. This is the language used against the Irish in the 19th century, against the Italians in the early 20th century. This is inappropriate.
All right, that was last night. What do you think?
What was that at the end? I got to go. Was it just getting too hot and heavy for her in there?
I think we just ran out of time.
Oh, okay. Oh, it was Megyn Kelly saying that. It was funny. I thought it was going to be a little more fiery. You guys kind of kept it in check, but made some good points. I thought she made some good points as well, though.
Well, I think that obviously there are two sides to the story. My big beef is the sloppy generalizations. Her statements that immigrants are making America into a hellhole. Trump's statements that Mexican immigrants are drug dealers and rapists. Both of them very unhelpful. In that regard.
Well, let me take a wild guess that she is in the middle of a book tour.
Adios America is her book. An insulting insinuation that Latinos want to remake the America that they seek so desperately to enter.
Yeah, well, she knows. Nobody knows how to hawk a book like she does.
WABCradio.com.
I think that Donald Trump has really painted himself in a corner. To mix my metaphors, he has... He's done the worst thing he could possibly do in politics. He has self-inflicted a wound on himself with this reckless rhetoric. He incurred the wrath of most of the American Latino population with wild generalizations about immigrants being drug dealers and rapists. Can he pull out? The Fox News poll shows him in a solid second place in the Republican field so far, Trump, with 11%, trailing only Jeb Bush, who has 15%. Dr. Ben Carson is third at 10%, according to the Fox News poll, the only other candidate in the double digits. So all those other names you've heard, Scott Walker, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and on and on and on, Mike Huckabee, all in the single digits, Trump in solid second place. But I think that because of this big, big debate, this blowback, this big controversy, I think that Donald's candidacy now is infected with a virus from which it will not recover, in my view. But what do you think? What do you think? We started in White Plains with Paul. What's up, Paul? What are you thinking about? Thanks for calling. Hello, Paul. Are you there? No, Paul. How about Rich? You there, Rich?
Geraldo.
Hi, buddy.
Geraldo, we've spoken before. I told you I'm half Hispanic, just like you are. I don't know if you recall, but let me tell you, yo hablo demasiado mejor español que usted.
Oh, no, no, no es correcto, caballero, pero sigue.
Yeah, well, Geraldo, you just contradicted yourself. I mean, here you're condemning, I mean, and I want to make another point about last night because I saw you with Ann, but you're saying that this is the death knell for Donald Trump. But then you quote the polling stats, and they're totally opposite. So I just don't understand that.
Well, I can explain that. Let me explain that. I think that you can get 11% of the Republican
primary
in your corner by saying hateful things about immigrants, but you can't win a nomination that way.
Well, they're hateful in your opinion. They may very well be accurate in the opinion of a lot of other people. This is your opinion. But at any rate, going back to last night. You made the related the immigration to the Irish and Italian immigration, and you can't do that because they're two different times periods. Back then was before the technology boom. There were jobs. There were a lot more jobs, and the people had to cross.
It's the same arguments, though. Stealing jobs, bringing crime, disease. Same arguments.
What's that?
About the Irish as about the Spanish now.
While Donald Trump's, may have been a little bit over the top with what he said, we have an immigration problem with too many illegal immigrants.
Has your life ever been negatively impacted, Rich, by an undocumented immigrant, ever?
Well, they take away jobs.
Did it ever take away any job that you know about?
Yeah.
Whose job?
Anybody in any working class person, you name it.
Happy birthday, Missy Elliott. Lose control. Donald Trump is losing control. Macy's just now announcing that they have cut ties with the real estate mogul and Republican presidential candidate after 700,000 people signed a petition.
So I can't get a Donald Trump power tie anymore at Macy's?
You can. He's losing control. He sells those $70 dress shirts, $65 ties, a fragrance called Success. He's been featured in Macy's ads. And now Donald is out of Macy's, the world's largest store. It's a tragedy, I'm telling you. Self-inflicted. If he would just listen to me and say he's sorry and move on.
I think it's too late. He had to say sorry in the 24 hours after that speech.
When I begged him to. When was that? On
like 2 weeks. Oh, when you begged him to just.
When I begged him. It was Monday.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mayor de Blasio is not begging anyone for an apology. He is very feisty, and he's gone after Andrew Cuomo, the governor, in a way I have never seen. I mean, I've seen feuds between mayors and governors before, but nothing like this one. Mayor de Blasio on our buddy Earl Lewis's New York Ones program Crash, do you have the cut? I want to play before we get. Give me the short one, and then we'll bring Earl in, and then we'll talk about it.
What I found was he engaged in his own sense of strategies, his own political machinations. And what we've often seen is if someone disagrees with him openly, some kind of revenge or vendetta follows.
Yikes. Yikes. Revenge or vendetta. Earl joins us now. Well done, my very competent colleague. Were you shocked that the mayor was so blunt in his critique of the governor?
I was a little surprised. I knew this was sort of brewing. You could kind of tell from talking with the mayor's people. And the question for over a year now has really been, Geraldo, how much of this do you make public? How much of this or how often and in what way do you choose to engage with the governor? And I was a little surprised that they chose to do it this way and at this time. But, you know, you get to know de Blasio a little bit, and you start to realize there's often a method to his madness, which I guess we'll get to in a minute. But, yeah, I was absolutely startled because politicians don't talk this way. It's normally, you know, my good friend that I have a disagreement with, or, you know, politics is a beanbag. We have a little rough and tumble. They usually sort of use these euphemisms to try and soften the edges. And there was just blunt, straight talk, which I'm just, you know, you don't hear very often from politicians at that level.
I know that there's a problem with the mayor's plan to build affordable housing. I know that he is pissed off about only getting control of the local schools for another year. But, Crash, play the longer bite of Mayor de Blasio declaring war on his former friend, Andrew Cuomo, the governor.
Governor offered a set of ideas when he ran, and obviously we haven't seen a lot of those ideas play out, but I think the fact is he has a close working relationship with the Senate. And I think in many instances he led the action in Albany, and I think he encouraged some of what the Senate did. I think it's a pretty open fact in Albany that Leader Flanagan was taking the governor's lead on a number of issues. And I want to hasten to say there was some interesting back and forth last week, and some unnamed sources well-placed in the Cuomo administration had a few things to say. I'm here in front of you on record saying what I believe. And what I believe happened here is the governor worked with the Senate in some cases to inhibit the work of the assembly, to inhibit the agenda that New York City put forward.
So what he's saying, Earl Lewis, my guest, who got that the big exclusive with Mayor de Blasio, what Mayor de Blasio is saying is that the governor, the Democratic governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, worked with Republicans in the New York State Senate to sabotage the desires of the state's Democrats. Is that correct, Earl?
I think more specifically, the agenda put forward by New York City, which, of course, is the Democratic bastion for the state. That is exactly what he's saying. He's saying that the governor for complicated transactional reasons did not side with the city when the city brought its housing agenda, its education agenda, its rent control.
So what does this mean, realistically? I mean, are the state troopers going to try and take on the NYPD? I mean, what happens here?
I think what does happen is some very important stuff actually got delayed, blocked, changed. You know, they were looking to make some real big changes in rent control, and that's what the city's agenda was, that's what the city's request was, and it didn't happen. I mean, there were some minor tweaking of it, and they tried to put a good face on it, but they were basically stymied. The mayoral control of the schools it's somewhat symbolic. I don't think anybody really seriously believes that the control is going to be taken away next year, but it was kind of a slap in the face. The main affordable housing program, the 421A program, is sort of in limbo. I mean, many parts of it were renewed and extended, but there are some important parts of it that still have to get renegotiated.
But let me ask you, Earl Lewis, New York One, does this mean essentially that the left-wing agenda, as critics label our mayor, a very progressive mayor, has been stymied by the middle of the road, Andrew Cuomo, that, that's the check and balance, that is this good or bad?
Well, I guess you could flip a coin, and on any given day I could go one way or the other. Either it's what you just described, meaning these are clashing agendas and philosophies, or some of it is a clash between offices, because in our system of checks and balances in American government, you always have to get the cooperation of somebody else. The governor needs the mayor needs the governor. And so some of it is built in and intentional, so we shouldn't get too upset about it. And then some of it, of course, is just personality, that they have different styles of government. What the mayor laid out, though, Geraldo, is a notion that we shouldn't always be horse trading, that some things just shouldn't be in that big mix up in Albany where you're trading health policy for crime policy, and you're trading housing policy for education policy. You know, I've been brought up to think that, yeah, it's a great big mixing bowl, and it's a pretty unpleasant job, and that's why we elect other people to do it, and this is what happens. It's bizarre, but that's democracy. What are you going to do? the mayor is saying, no, we need to do better. We need to take a different approach. That automatically puts them on a collision course, not just with the governor, but with half the legislators up there.
I agree. Quickly, before I lose you, Earl Lewis, New York One, you freaked out by these series of church burnings in black churches in the South?
You know, I'm old enough to remember, Geraldo, I'm sure you do too, that in the 1990s there were a wave of dozens of them, and they actually, a startled Congress passed a church burning act, you know, at the time. So, no, this is you know, if you know your civil rights history, if you know your American history, if you know recent history, meaning the 1990s, this is what happens, and it makes clear that while a lot of people don't have a lot of patience for civil rights protesters, at the root of it, there are people who are still putting their lives on the line, trying to sort of make the country better, and there are a lot of people who don't want that to happen.
I'm staggered by it. I'm horrified by it, that it still exists in this day and age. I think it's terrorism. Earl Lewis, thank you. Congratulations on your scoop with the mayor and with his honor and the gov. I appreciate it.
All right, you got it. Thank you.
All right, so I want to go back to Trump. When we resume our discussion, he has sued Univision for $500 million for dropping the Miss America pageant. He's using a First Amendment argument, but it's a breach of contract lawsuit. And I tell you what, it's a breach of contract. I mean, you can't not follow through on a contract because you don't like what someone is saying in an unrelated realm, it seems to me. I think he's got a pretty good case, probably settle it, but it's a pretty good $500 million lawsuit. So Trump's not taking it lying down, but his empire now is besieged. Just got kicked out of Macy's. A lot going on.
Where New York comes to talk.
Brand new CNN poll out at 55 minutes after 10 o'clock. The economy is the top issue, 47%. Believe that it is extremely important. Foreign policy, 32%. Healthcare, 44%. Believe it's extremely important. Illegal immigration, 30%. Terrorism, 48%. Race relations, 28%. Same-sex marriage, 20%. So that's way, way down over the last several months. It was a high of 37%. Now it's down to 20 because no one cares, because now it's the law of the land. But wait until I give you these. I need a drum roll, Crash. Got a drum roll?
I can give you one.
The number one candidate, according to CNN, is still the former governor of Florida, Jeb Bush, at 19%. So Jeb is up from last month, 13% to 19%. Thank you for the drums. Trump last month was at 3%. Trump is in second place now, according to CNN, this new poll released today, with 12%. So you got Bush 19, Trump 12. Huckabee was at 10% last month. He's down to 8%. He's still number two. Ben Carson is flat at 7. Paul is down. Rand Paul is down from 8 to 7. Rubio took a catastrophic drop. He was at 14% last month, now just 6%. Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, was at 10%. He's now down to 6%. So the headline of the new CNN poll, Jeb Bush from 13% to 19%, a clear front runner now. Trump from 3%, quadrupling his take to 12%. Donald Trump now firmly established in second place in the primary process, at least right now at this early stage. Bush, Trump, followed by Huckabee. We'll be back after the news. I love Deborah Harry, Blondie. Call me. 866-ERALDO, 866-437-2536, Deborah Harry's birthday. The President of the United States is about to announce the full normalization of relations with Cuba. It's a move that I heartily endorse. Long overdue, this relic of the Cold War, this embargo that accomplished nothing but inflicting pain on the ordinary Cuban people, cutting them off from their relatives here in the United States. 11 million Cubans, 2-3 million here in the United States. The president is about to announce that we will be opening an embassy in Havana. It's quite a place. It's an amazing place, Cuba. It's just picture Puerto Rico and then stretch it out five times longer. I mean, it's an amazing, amazing island. Gorgeous. Beautiful Cordillera, the central mountains, and then the beaches. The place is a mess, though, in terms of the structures all dating back to the 50s and 60s, the cars all dating back to the 50s and 60s, the country being kept together with tape and string and innovation. It is a fascinating, fascinating tale. So when the president comes out, which will be momentarily, I'll definitely dip into the president, get the essence of the message. Rosario, what are you calling about Cuba or Trump?
Trump.
All right, let me.
I love your show, buddy.
Thank you for calling.
You got it, brother.
So what's on your mind?
I'm just calling about illegal immigration, whether it's from South America or North America, it has to be controlled.
I agree.
And not only, the thing is that not only are white Americans are losing their jobs, but Asian Americans, Black Americans, Latino Americans, whether they're Puerto Ricans, Dominican, Cuban, Colombian.
What jobs are being lost? I totally disagree with that. And I have to tell you that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce agrees with me. They did a study. Who's gonna pick the fruits and the vegetables?
I lost my job, Geraldo. I lost my job. I've been a driver for 30-plus years. I was already making almost $20 an hour. I got laid off because I was making too much.
Well, if you lost
the...
Here's the president of the United States. We'll talk more about that driver thing. Here's the president.
More than 54 years ago, at the height of the Cold War, the United States closed its embassy in Havana. Today, I can announce that the United States has agreed to formally reestablish diplomatic relations with the Republic of Cuba and reopen embassies in our respective countries. This is a historic step forward in our efforts to normalize relations with the Cuban government and people and begin a new chapter with our neighbors in the Americas. When the United States shuttered our embassy in 1961, I don't think anyone expected that it would be more than half a century before it reopened. After all, our nations are separated by only 90 miles, and there are deep bonds of family and friendship between our people. But there have been very real, profound differences between our governments, and sometimes we allow ourselves to be trapped by a certain way of doing things. For the United States, that meant clinging to a policy that was not working. Instead of supporting democracy and opportunity for the Cuban people, our efforts to isolate Cuba, despite good intentions, increasingly had the opposite effect, cementing the status quo and isolating the United States from our neighbors in this hemisphere. The progress that we mark today is yet another demonstration that we don't have to be imprisoned by the past. When something isn't working, we can and will change. Last December, I announced that the United States and Cuba had decided to take steps to normalize our relationship. As part of that effort, President Raul Castro and I directed our teams to negotiate the reestablishment of embassies. Since then, our State Department has worked hard with their Cuban counterparts to achieve that goal. And later this summer, Secretary Kerry will travel to Havana formally to proudly raise the American flag over our embassy once more.
All right, so that's the headline on the 22nd day of this month of July. John Kerry, the Secretary of State, will be traveling to Havana to raise the American flag on the grounds of the shuttered U.S. Embassy. I assume they've been dusting it off since this thaw began. I am all for it. I think a small clique of Cuban exiles who lost, and I'm not giving short shrift to their economic loss and their emotional turmoil over the takeover of Cuba 1959-1960 by Fidel Castro. But you got to work that out. We're friends with we have relations with China, with dictatorships in Africa, with Vietnam, where we lost over 50,000 dead, Japan, Germany, all these nations that were our enemies. Time marches on, and it's time to bring the Cuban-American relationship into the modern era. All right, you can ask me about that if you want. Now, that fellow said that he lost his job as a driver to immigrants. I mean, come on. immigrants don't have driver's licenses. I mean, they don't. Unless, you know, I know that there were various proposals. I think there may be one that's in effect in California. I don't recall right now. To give immigrants, non-resident, even undocumented immigrants, driver's licenses. But you didn't lose your job as a driver to an illegal immigrant. You may have lost your job as a driver to Uber, but it wasn't to an undocumented Mexican immigrant. And I say again, I don't want to dwell on this immigrant, because I understand that the vast majority of people listening to me right now or watching me on Fox News disagree with my position. I get it. I understand that my kind of more positive, optimistic view of immigration is the minority. But I really believe it after researching two books. I believe what I'm talking about. Russia is dying. The Western European countries are dying. They're getting older and older. We have a baby boom generation that's aging out right now. They're all collecting Social Security now, or beginning to. Who's going to fund Social Security when we have a top-heavy population, an aging population like Russia does? Who's going to fund it? Who are the strong backs that are going to be paying into the Social Security Trust Fund? We have to harness, we have to regulate. Of course we've got to know who's coming in. And I don't care if Trump wants to build or you want to build a fence that's a mile high, that's fine with me. We have to have an inventory of who's here. And we have to regulate how they assimilate into this culture. All right, now, you know how, I want to read you some letters from Trump also as the program progresses, but this thing about the black churches, I don't want to lose sight of that, because I really am troubled that old harsh style racism is making a comeback. I mean, obviously, most glaringly with what happened in the Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, but these other church burnings, what's going on? Reverend Jamal is with the United Christian Ministry for Justice, joins us right now. So, Reverend, first of all, thank you for coming on. What's on your mind?
What's on our mind is we see right-wing racism popping up. And I'm going to tell you something. I'm 60 years old. So I remember I was a little boy naturally with the Bull Connors and Maddox and all of these people stopping blacks from entering into college and things of that nature. This Republican Party, ever since President Obama became a president of this country, have literally gone out of their minds. I have never seen the kind of talk since that time, since the time of Maddox and Bull Connor and people like that. They are so outwardly hating. It's crazy. And I think, this is my opinion, and this is the opinion of a lot of our members who are different denominations in our Christian movement. But, we obviously think that it's coming back because the right wing is becoming too right wing. They can't even see their left hand. And the hatred of President Obama, I think, is unfounded. I'm not a fan of President Obama myself. I have a lot of different things that I see with him that I don't like. But their attitude, if he says yes, they say no. If he says hello, they say goodbye. And there has to be some common ground. If it is not, I believe they're going to try to take this country back to the grand old days of Jim Crow.
You really believe that? Do you really believe that there's malice in the hearts of Republicans, Reverend Jamal?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've never seen, like I said, I'm sick. I've never seen it. This is not the Republicans of Ronald Reagan. These are not the Republicans of
well, who specifically are you talking about?
I'm talking about a wide range of Republicans.
But who? Tell me who. You're talking about in the Congress?
I'm talking about in the Congress. I'm talking about a wide. Look at Donald Trump. I'll give you a good example. Look at Donald Trump. The things he's saying about, you would never hear that kind of trash coming out years ago. I mean, if you thought it, you didn't come out and say it like that. Their boldness with their rhetoric is Naziistic, to in my opinion. This is the kind of rhetoric that Hitler and his brown shirts were using.
All right, I think you're going a little far there, far afield there, Reverend. But I just wonder, what about this burning of the churches? I mean, this is something that's very concerning.
Well, let me tell you something. It's something that we're going to have to deal with, and it's still on the same vein, Geraldo, of hatred of what I'm talking about. We have to try to come together, conservatives. I'm a liberal naturally, and let the people see that we can sit together and talk, you know, instead of flame throwing. And to be quite honest, my friend, you haven't heard what black people think. You don't have a liberal radio on television, excuse me, on the radio anymore. Everything is so right wing now. Every station on the AM is right wing conservative now. You don't hear.
We're not red, not blue, but red, white, and blue. But Reverend Jamal, that's why I had you on. I wanted you to say your piece. I appreciate it. I'm out of time right now. I got to go. It's 18 minutes after 11 o'clock. Reverend Jamal from the United Christian Ministry for Justice, thank you so much.
77 WABC.
Welcome back. 25 minutes after 11 o'clock. 866 Geraldo is the number. We certainly have a full plate today. Everything from church burnings, and they are saying now lightning likely caused the most recent of the half dozen black churches that have burned. Lightning now, they are saying, most likely caused. So we're talking about that, about Trump, about immigration.
Speaking of Trump, we got a response from Trump about the severing of relations with Macy's, that announcement coming from Macy's this morning. He says in a statement he's decided to terminate the relationship with Macy's because of the pressure being put on them by outside sources.
A million people now, the petition as of last evening, a million people signed the petition to Macy's demanding that they drop. So Trump is saying that he voluntarily did it?
He did. That's what he's saying in a statement.
So there'd be no lawsuit between Macy's and Trump, like the lawsuit between Univision and Trump.
And, you know, while we're talking politics, another piece of interesting breaking news out of the Hillary Clinton camp, being smacked around over the last 6 months, apparently not hurting her. She's on track to raise $45 million during the first quarter as a candidate. And she says 91% of the donations were $100 or less. So they think they're on track now to make $100 million from individual donors by the end of 2015.
$100 million.
You need about $1 billion probably.
You need about
race.
I was going
to
say, but she still has a ways to go, but she's formidable. And it is interesting how she really is a Teflon candidate, at least to this stage, like her husband was. In the sense that when you think about the whole email scandal about Benghazi, about, you know, everything else that has gone down on her watch, for which she is being criticized justly and unjustly, the fact that she, I saw, continues to lead Jeb Bush by 13 percentage points in the last survey. So it will be an interesting time. This will be, you have to stay tuned to 77 WABC. You've got the big debates coming up next month. And the top 10 candidates, of which Trump will surely be numbered, will be happening. There'll be so much to talk about, and it'll be interesting to see if Hillary maintains. I mean, after all these hits, is that possible that she will maintain? That is the, you know, have people made up their minds so firmly that they won't be swayed by whatever the news
of
the day?
Well, most people, I think, will be. There's always those people in the middle. But what's interesting is she hasn't really answered questions about many of these things because she hasn't made herself available to the press. At a debate with Bernie Sanders there, you know he's going to call her out for some of these things. And then for sure, if, assuming that she's the Democratic nominee, when those debates come a year from now, whoever's on the other side will call her out for some of those things as well, and she'll have to answer to them.
Here's Jack in Astoria. Hey, Jack, what's on your mind today? Thanks for calling 866 Geraldo.
Good morning, Geraldo. The church burnings. I think it's really heavy handed in what you're doing. I think that the overly overtoned racism that you have towards people who you suspect, white people, you know, by inviting this character on who's a supposed reverend. I tend to believe that it's very much the very same people who burnt Ferguson, the very same people who burnt Baltimore. Not happy unless they're burning something.
Wait, Jack. What are you suggesting?
I'm not going to wait because I heard.
Well, you got to explain what you just said, dude.
Well, you have to understand.
Are you saying that they're burning it themselves? The black people are burning their own churches?
No, no. What I'm saying is that the anarchists are burning it. You want to make it a black and white issue. This happens to be a very serious political issue. The political issue is that these people want to feel that they have an ability now to gain the power that they need so that this way they can control a larger segment of society.
Who are these people? Which people are you talking about?
I just told you, these people, the anarchists, Geraldo. You heard me say the word anarchist?
Yeah, I know, but I'm not sure who you're talking about.
Look, Geraldo, you're a pretty smart guy, right?
I'm baffled, Jack.
What it is here is that you have a bunch of scum who are burning churches, and they happen to be of a political persuasion, anarchists, made up of black, white, and Hispanic. All right? I hope you're happy with that answer.
I'm not, because I still don't.
Then I suggest you wake up, Geraldo.
Are you saying it's a self-inflicted wound?
No, Geraldo, I'm not saying it's a self-inflicted wound. You're taking everything out of context. I'm saying that this is a purposeful wound that people want to go in with the pure purpose of going in to destroy this country even further.
Okay, I got it, Jack. So they're doing it themselves. That's
believable.
That'll fly. I tell you one thing that we haven't talked about. I've had an exchange with a former Baltimore Sun reporter who was very critical of some of my coverage. And particularly when I called Baltimore tiny, I said Baltimore has about the same number of murders as New York, and Baltimore is tiny in comparison, just 7% the size of New York. He was so insulted that I called Baltimore tiny, but then he wrote me back and said they had 10 shootings the night before last.
Yeah.
Pamela Anderson of Canada, her birthday.
This is her singing?
No, Sarah McLachlan.
Okay. I didn't know she had that talent to sing.
It's also Dominion Day in Canada, which is like July 4th. I'm headed to Toronto. You know, Erica went to camp in Ontario and has lots of friends in Toronto, so I'm going to go up there. I hope they don't arrest me for my... Remember the beef we had with Canada over... When my remarks that there have been no verified terrorist penetrations from the southern border,
but
only from the northern border, then I had to defend that when that went viral. They went crazy in Canada, millions of people. And I mean, in a country one-tenth the population of this one, I think that everybody in the country was engaged in hurling insults my way.
Oh, I can't wait for the pat-down you're going to get coming back from Canada. Those agents on the other side, they're going to have a good time with you.
Puerto Rico is in terrible, desperate fiscal straits. I'm not sure why this lady, Carmen, is calling from Puerto Rico. I don't know what's on her mind, but we'll see. Hi, Carmen. Thank you very much for calling. Gracias. Bienvenido. How you doing?
Listen, I would like to talk about Donald Trump.
Okay.
I appreciate him because he give a job to diversity, doesn't matter from professional to the poor people, because I saw that everywhere he have hotel, golf, like the Bronx, everywhere he have people that say hire everybody, doesn't matter, housekeeping, cleaning floor, whatever he give a job. But the problem is some person or some community don't want to accept a certain thing, and for that they want to keep him silent. But let me tell you, Puerto Rican receive a lot of bad commentary, and sometimes we have to keep him quiet because we don't have nobody defend. But if, sorry to tell you, I want to be the truth. Donald Trump give a job to Mexican too.
I agree.
To Dominican, every kind of people, every diversity, doesn't matter the language, he give a job in any company or businesses that he has. Also in Puerto Rico, for a long, long time, he had the Bahia Regis and the Gulf, and his people make heaven to Puerto Rico to give you a job. And in that way, a lot of people know that Puerto Rico.
Okay, we got it, Carmen. So, thank you very much.
Sorry to tell you, but sorry for Mexico, but the same Univision say and report about drug cartel, like you remember the last time the drug cartel, they report all that is in Univision.
About the Mexican drug cartel.
The last one they arrested, the big one. I don't remember. I'm getting nervous, but I'm seeing Univision, and the same Univision report the criminality, the border, how a lot of people crossing. They interview a lot of person over there. They reported when people come with the tuner with drugs. They reported the drug cartel, and that is true. I don't know how they getting mad with this guy that give it job to Mexican too.
I would say, well you said, Carmen. I gotta go. Tengo que ir, pero muchísimas gracias. Tengo que ir. Perfecto, gracias. What a full spirited defense of Donald Trump from Carmen calling all the way from Puerto Rico, suggesting that, hey, wait a second, even Univision themselves has done exposés of the drug dealers and other criminals coming across the southern border. And no one is suggesting that there aren't some criminals sneaking across the southern border and some rapists and drug dealers among them, I have no doubt. But, you can't condemn 11, 12 million, some people say up to 30 million. I don't know how many million undocumented there are. That's why I want an inventory. That's why I want them out of the shadows. That's why the president's on the right track to give executive amnesty effectively to those who have been here for more than 10 years, have children born in the United States, and have no criminal records, and who are willing to pay a fine and learn English. That's why I'm for it. Trump's sin and why it's generated this terrible reaction is it's the sin of generalization. It's the sin of stereotyping. It's the sin of suggesting that an entire race of people is guilty of some of these hideous offenses.
Yeah, but, you know, I think people don't give him enough cover as well. It was sloppy what he said, and what he meant to say, if he had written it down and maybe if he had had to prepare a speech, it would have never come out that way.
I agree. That's why I wanted them to apologize.
That's what would have been his stance. And so you have these people, a million people signing this petition trying to get NBC to sever the ties, which they did. Now Macy's. There's nothing to suggest this guy, there's a racist bone in this guy's body. There's not.
I mean, agree.
You look who he surrounds himself with, how he talks to people. There's nothing to suggest that. So
I agree with you.
While I understand these people are signing this petition to suggest that Donald Trump is a racist in any form or manner, it's not true. There's nothing accurate about it.
I'm with you on that 100%. But the thing is, you've got to at some point swallow your pride. I mean, haven't you ever apologized?
Of course.
I mean, haven't you been embarrassed to apologize?
All the time.
I mean, you know how hard it is for me as a proud man to apologize? Sometimes you got to just bite the bullet, man. If that's not what you meant, then just say, you know, I'm sorry, but that's not what I meant.
And it was an easy apology. You can just say, I was sloppy.
Easy.
I had no notes. I was just
exactly.
All talking off the top of my head.
It's simple. Simple. Here's Paul, a buddy from Queens. What's up, Paul? Thanks for holding on.
I was going to say, the best thing Trump could do is put his show, The Apprentice, on Netflix, because this way you don't have to pay
great
for
idea. Cable. Great idea. Great idea.
And I buy his show right away, because then I'm only paying a buck or something.
And you could binge watch the whole season. I totally agree. It's a great idea.
And number two,
I don't think Trump owns The Apprentice, though. I think that Mark Burnett owns The Apprentice.
Well, you know, they could go through that. But number two, what Trump was saying, he's saying they're all good people that are coming across. So he's not saying that everybody is a drug dealer and nobody is a rapist. But let me ask you a question, Ronaldo. If you get 11 million to 30 million undocumented people here, what is the Border Patrol doing? They didn't do anything if you got 30 million people across the border.
Well, I believe it's in the hundreds of thousands per year. They stop an awful lot. They stop a lot. Okay, I got you.
They're there for the money. They're pushing people here for cheap labor.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, Ann Coulter's thesis is that the Democrats are turning a blind eye to it because these people, once they do become legitimate, become Democrats. My argument, I got it, Paul. My argument to that is George W. Bush got it. He got 40% of the Hispanic vote in 2004. You know, you have Jeb Bush now with a Mexican wife, George P. Bush, his son, the highway commissioner in Texas, is like a heartthrob, totally fluent in Spanish. Jeb's pretty darn good in Spanish, better than me. You know, you just have to do it with sensitivity. Of course you want the border sealed. Every nation needs secure borders. How do you have a sovereign state without secure borders? But what you can't do is begin to paint with this broad brush that just hurts people's feelings. You can't. You know how sensitive black people get when I talk about black-on-black crime? You have to be very specific what you're talking about. If there's a problem, and it can be defined that way, black-on-black, brown-on-brown, immigrants, this, that, the other thing, you've got to be very specific what you're talking about. Racism is precisely that. I don't have the definition in front of me, but racism is when you attribute to an entire race of people some attribute, some stereotype, negative stereotype. You just can't do that in this day and age. And if you do by accident, as Noam suggests, and I believe Noam is correct, then all you got to do is say you're sorry. Just back off a little bit. Look at all this consequences now. Look at this war, this unnecessary war now. Macy's dropping out. Miss Universe. Miss USA. What about those contestants? What about these people who have worked their whole, you know, young adult lives getting ready? It's like when they Carter boycotted the Olympics in Russia in 1980 because of Afghanistan. What about all those athletes that were training and peaking at that exact point? These beautiful women have been training and aspiring. What about the hotels?
Or the sales force at Macy's that sells the Trump line? What about those people? Doesn't really hurt Trump. I mean, Trump's going to be super wealthy no matter what.
77 WABC.
You read the story of the mother who tied her 4-year-old son to a bush when she went into the apartment to babysit?
Yeah, there might be a little more to this story.
I hope so.
It's in Spring Valley. This mom was babysitting another child in an apartment complex. She had taken her own child out to do an errand, and that child would not go back in. But now we're hearing, and so she then tied him to a bush, which clearly was not a good idea. It might have been tied to that bush for 45 minutes. But now we're hearing there's some behavioral issues with the child, and to not get him to run, she now ties him up. Now, I don't know that there's any that she's correct in doing so.
Are you defending this tactic as a parent?
I'm not defending it because
Do you use this in your own home?
No. I'm suggesting that there may be some form of autism here. With kids who are autistic,
you still don't tie them up.
But a lot of them are runners.
No, I appreciate it.
Right, and when they're runners, you have to hold on to them. And maybe, I don't know that's the case here, but there may be more to this story than just a bad mom.
That's why you need these adult centers like the WORC Center, the Family Center for Autism. It's Diana's birthday. Hi, Diana.
Well, I wish it were.
You're my Princess Diana from New Jersey. Hurry.
I'm fine, thanks. I just wanted to say, Geraldo, we're never going to solve this immigration issue until we just stop the hypocrisy and the demagoguery. I mean, the Republican Party has made it sound like everybody else is, you know, anti-America in our way and want to change everything, and they're the only ones for America. Hello?
Hi, honey. We're almost out of time. Call back tomorrow. Thank you. See you tomorrow, folks.